The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. Oh, can you hear me okay?
Yes, is it?
It's nice to be here. The other day, I was driving, and I was at a stoplight. It was night, so it was dark, and as it happened, I was the only car in the intersection. So, you know, I'm following the rules. It's a red light. I'm stopped. But, you know, there's nobody going the other direction. Nobody, as far as I can see, nobody. But I'm following the rules. I'm sitting there, patiently waiting for it to turn green. I probably wasn't being mindful. Sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not. But, and then I saw in my rearview mirror, this car was going so fast, right up behind, was coming up behind. I was, like, frightened. This, over 100 miles an hour, probably, like, something ridiculous. And I'm stopped at a stoplight. And I have this panicky feeling, like, what do I do? Should I, like, go through the red light to get away from this car? Or what is this car going to do? It's either going to run right into me, or it's going to go into the other lane and go around. Maybe there's going to be a head-on collision in the other direction. Or maybe it's going to hit the cross traffic. My heart was pounding, you know, this feeling in my gut. And then I was quickly trying to remember, okay, if I'm going to get in a car accident, I can't remember, should I be, like, tighten my muscles or should I be relaxed? You know, this kind of feeling so that I could minimize the amount of injury. As it happened, this car came up behind me, went zoom, right to the round, and went right through the red light, right through the intersection, choo, off into the distance. My heart was still just pounding. I couldn't believe it. I had, like, still maybe an hour to drive before I got home, and I felt kind of shaky the whole way home. Fear. This was, like, some real fear that came up. This imminent threat of my well-being, of, you know, if it's quite something completely unexpected, wasn't something I completely imagined, but this feeling, very uncomfortable feeling. I think all of us probably have had fear, right? And there's lots of things that we're afraid of. It wasn't until I started a meditation practice that I realized, wow, I'm actually afraid of all kinds of things. For example, looking at my thoughts, I noticed that I was doing a lot of planning. Like, okay, well, of course, you know, I'm supposed to plan. That's how you get things done. And that's what I'm supposed to do, is get things done. So I should be planning. But when I wanted to kind of put it down, put the planning down, I realized, oh, I couldn't do it. I couldn't just let planning go. Then I noticed that actually what was fueling the planning was a fear. There was a fear underneath it. This fear of being uncomfortable. Okay, better plan that. Okay, so I'll bring a sweater just in case it gets cold in the later afternoon, but then I'll want to bring my sandals because sometimes it's warm. You know, just these kind of incessant kind of like planning things or mapping out. I don't want to be late because then this person may not like me if I'm not late, if I'm late or things like this, right? So there's this fear that was underneath all this planning. But also, right, we have fear of failure, of not achieving the things that we set out to do or wish to do, the fear of missing out, the fear of pain. I think many of us, when we think about dying, it's really inextricably mixed up with fear of pain, let alone fear of death. So fear is part of the human experience. It's unavoidable. All of us have it. Some of it, some of us maybe have more than others, or tend to be a little bit fearful than others, but still it's really part of the experience. But what is it? What is fear? When I was describing that episode with the car, I talked about my heart was pounding, had this feeling in my gut. My thoughts were kind of racing. Okay, now was I supposed to be, what should I do? Should I get out of the way? Should I relax my body if he's going to hit me? Or, you know, and this real confusion and this flurry of thoughts about what to do. So fear isn't a simple thing. It's like a composite thing. It has a mixture of elements that are in our body, and it has elements that are in our mind. And in this way, it's often related to anxiety, or maybe it's a type of anxiety too, where there can be a tension in our body that is kind of related to a fear of something that we're imagine is going to happen. So unlike the fear of this car hitting into me, running into me, anxiety is more about things that we're imagining. It's often more about what we think is going to happen and what we're trying to prevent happening, or we're afraid that something that we want isn't going to happen. So I tend to think of anxiety as more of something that really involves our imagination or our projection, whereas fear is something about more imminent, if a saber-toothed tiger, those kinds of things, were to show up, there would be a lot of fear probably in all of us for lots of reasons. Sometimes people talk about they have fear of the unknown. But I think if we really examine, we don't really have fear of the unknown. Yeah, we do have a little bit, but it's mostly fear of what we're imagining is going to be, fear of what we're filling in the blank of the unknown, of something that's really going to be deleterious or uncomfortable or something that we don't wish. So I'm going on and on about this. I guess I probably don't need to, because all of you know about fear. It is just part of the way that it can be. But it's not always a sign that things are wrong. Even though fear clearly is like a sign of things are dangerous, imminent danger, it can also be a sign, especially in our meditation practice, of kind of a maturation of our practice. Maybe we're getting into a little bit of new territory. Maybe things are different with the landscape in our minds. Maybe we are experiencing things that we haven't experienced before. Or maybe we're seeing things in a way we haven't seen before. Or just something unfamiliar can have a little twinge of fear with it. So it can be a good sign if we have some fears. It means that we're like right on the edge, the growing edge of our maturing practice. There can also be fear about doing harm. There can be fear, a concern that we're maybe trying to make a decision and don't want anybody to be harmed by it. So that's a healthy kind of fear that can help us navigate our way in the world. That's also a sign of some healthy practice if we have some concern for others in such a way that it affects us, in a nice way that it informs our decisions and helps us not have regret later. But of course, unhealthy fear is when we allow our imaginations to run away from us and to ruminate, or what's the word I'm looking for? To fuel that kind of the fearful thoughts, right? That can be an unhealthy way where we kind of get stuck into ways of thinking that just fuel our fear. So what can we do about it? What can we do when fear arises? There are a few things. This is true for fear and for all difficult or uncomfortable emotions. The first one is to recognize it. This is a big part of mindfulness practice, is just to notice what's happening. So sometimes it's helpful just to say, oh, this is fear. I'm feeling afraid. Sometimes that can be very powerful. Sometimes it's not sufficient, but just noting, like, this is what fear feels like. This lump in my throat, this feeling in my stomach. If you have to go up and give a presentation in front of a group of people and you don't feel prepared, maybe you have sweaty palms or something. But just to recognize that, okay, this is fear. And then to allow it to be there. It's uncomfortable. Nobody's going to say fear is comfortable. But can we just accept that this is what's happening? This is the truth of this moment. This particular moment, there's fear. And can we allow it to be there? We don't need to like arm wrestle with reality and try to make it different or wish it away. The truth is, at that moment, it's there. But there also may be some aversion at the same time. We could recognize the aversion as well. We can allow the aversion to be there. So not only is there fear, but there's a wish that it would go away. There's a wish that it weren't here. And the third thing that we can do, recognize, allow, is to apply wisdom. Whatever wisdom is available to us at that moment. We don't always have our best wisdom available to us, especially when we're feeling afraid, right? There may be not a lot of wisdom available. But whatever wisdom is available for us, we can apply it. And what do I mean by that? A big part of this practice and part of the teachings, both the rhetoric and kind of what we actually experience, things change, right? Things change. And so maybe that can be helpful, if it's available for you, to imagine, like, okay, this fear is here now, but it doesn't mean that I'm going to feel fearful for the rest of my life. It doesn't mean it's going to be here forever. Instead, we could also examine, well, actually, it didn't just spontaneously arise for no reason. There's a reason why the fear here is here. There's another part of wisdom is we can examine, okay, what is contributing to this? What are the reasons for this? Maybe we went on a bender and watched lots of scary movies. And then when we see somebody that's walking with a axe in their hand on the street, right, then we feel more fear than if we hadn't done that. I'm making this up, right? But there's conditions, right, that make us, that are more apt to to experience more fear. Or maybe we have some life experiences that really had a big impact on us that then kind of sensitize us, and then we're fearful that they will be repeated again, or that somehow that we will experience them again, that we have that maybe somebody else doesn't think is fearful. In fact, some things we may think are fearful, other people may think are fun, right? The fear, what we imagine is fearful, is not inherent in the object or the experience. It's just our interpretation. Bungee jumping, it's not something that I feel like I want to do. I'm afraid to be jumping off a cliff. But some people may think, like, this is great. I want to do this. It's kind of an extreme example. But there's lots of examples, right, that we may find it fearful, but other people wouldn't. So that could be wisdom, is to notice that it's not inherent in this situation that's fear. It's not scary itself. It's our reaction. It's what it's triggering in us, or a memory we have, or associations we have, or ideas we have, or things that we're imagining. That is what's making it fearful. Maybe that can be helpful too, right? To imagine, is there anybody on this planet that thinks that this isn't scary? And for me, that's a little bit helpful. To imagine that maybe I could be like that person who isn't afraid here in this situation. So we can, when fear arises, we can recognize it. Just name it sometimes. Maybe recognizing also includes that there's at least two components. There's a mental component, there's our thoughts associated with it, as well as a physical component. And with fear, sometimes that physical component is really prominent. So we could recognize it, we could allow it, accept it, and we could use wisdom, whatever wisdom we have available for us. R-A-W, recognize, allow, wisdom. This is true, we could use this for fear as well as all difficult emotions. They have this kind of same element of that they're uncomfortable and we get tangled up with them, and this is a way to help us become disentangled up with them. But you may say, okay, well, that's fine. Okay, I can work with the fear that arises, but actually, I'd prefer to have less fear. I'd prefer to have less scary things in my life. I'd prefer to not feel the fear in the first place, not to feel that. So preserved in the Buddhist teachings are some things that we can do to help minimize fear. And when I stumbled upon this list, I found a little delight because I thought, A, I kind of like lists, and B, I thought, oh, this is great. This is something I could do, right, to kind of have a little bit less fear. So the first thing on this list, cultivate wisdom. This makes sense, right? If one of the ways that we're going to work with fear when it arises is to apply wisdom, it helps if we have access to that wisdom, and we're more apt to have access to it if we've been cultivating it, if we've been practicing it with it, if we've been working with it in easier situations. So this includes noticing that things arise and pass away. Actions have consequences. But these are obvious things. It's not rocket science. But there's a difference between kind of like abstractly knowing it and really examining it and having a more direct experience of these things, different than a mental experience of them. And also notice that a lot of these things that we're concerned about, we don't have to take them so personally. It's often the objects outside of us. They have their own qualities. They're arising and passing away. It's not necessarily our fault or our in our realm of control, or that we can make them be otherwise or something like that. And then, of course, another way of wisdom is to recognize what is wholesome and what is unwholesome. What is skillful and what is unskillful. The Buddhists have lists to guide us, but I think often our direct experience can guide us in this too. Like what leads to more well-being and what leads to less well-being? That's wisdom, to make that kind of discernment. I know that if I eat this box of cookies, this is my sensitive part. I love cookies. I just don't feel good after I eat them. But this is a little bit of wisdom. Like, okay, there's going to be consequences to this action. Not as wholesome or skillful to do that. It's a silly example, but there's lots of things in our lives, right? Every day, where we can notice what is leads us to greater ease and well-being and what leads us away. So this is the first thing that we can do to help minimize the amount of fear in our lives, is to cultivate wisdom. So it's available to us when fear does arise, but it's also less likely to cause fearful events if we're choosing skillful things and we're not getting tangled up with all our objects and experiences, but instead can notice that they arise and they pass away. The second thing to help us minimize the arrival of fear is energy. This makes sense. If you're feeling really depleted, then it's easier to feel overwhelmed or incapable or of something, and fear kind of can be with that, as opposed to like, oh, okay, I can handle this. And if you don't have energy, it can take over and be fearful. So this includes things also about what nourishes us, what supports us, what supports our energy, what takes away from our energy. this is a little bit about wisdom as well, is what's wholesome and what's unwholesome. And how do we spend our energy? What do we put effort towards? Are we spending our energy and putting effort towards things that support our lives or towards things that deplete them? So that's something to pay attention to if we'd like to have less fear, is to have energy. Also, we need energy to practice sometimes, right? It's not always easy to come to the cushion or to come to a meditation center or to whatever our practice may be in daily life or to read a Dharma book. Sometimes we just may not feel inspired. But if we have some energy, we're more apt to do that. And then that, in turn, that practice can help support the wisdom. And so one way to help work with our energies, of course, is to connect with our intentions. Why are we practicing in the first place? What inspires us? Why did we begin this practice? And what are our aspirations? These are things that can support our energy and our kind of commitment or dedication to practice. A third thing on how to minimize fear is to create the conditions for blamelessness. This makes sense, right? If we take care of our responsibilities, if we behave ethically, if we don't do things that we will regret, we'll have less fear. We won't have people who want to cause us harm. As well as we may be having fear because we're about to die. It's natural to have some fear then. If we've lived a life of blamelessness, we'll have less fear. Because we knew that we did the best life that we could, as opposed to filled with regret or remorse. Also, blamelessness has to do with following the five precepts. Not to kill other beings, not to take that which is not freely given, be careful with our sexual energy, to not speak untruthfully, and to not cloud the mind intentionally. Following the precepts is a way of providing safety for other people. They know that they don't have to be afraid of us while we are following the precepts. But somehow if other people know that they can relax and feel comfortable and aren't afraid around us, then somehow that just creates an atmosphere, right, of trust and safety. But I also have an example how I wanted to work with this first precept, not to kill living beings. I had no intention of killing humans, of course, and I'm not a hunter, so I'm not going to probably kill animals. But there were those ants in my kitchen that I was not fond of. Okay, here we go. I'm going to practice with this. How can I work with these ants? The first thing was to keep my kitchen, of course, very clean as possible, which is not my habit. I mean, cleanish is kind of often good enough, but not when there's ants involved, right? So many of you have done this, or, you know, in order to prevent them to coming in, I put cinnamon on where they like to come in, and when they were in, I would take like a little brush and put them on this, like a dustpan thing, and take them outside, and something happened when I started treating these little ants with respect. You know, as much as, you know, these little, okay, you guys, all right, here we go, let's do this. My fear of spiders practically went away. Just this act of starting to just notice, okay, these little creatures here, I'm sharing the planet with them, and somehow taking care of them in some simple way helped me lose my fear of other creepy, crawly things. And spiders, they're not my favorite creatures, but I don't have the fear that I used to have where I couldn't go in the room where the spider was, and I had to wait for the spider to go away, and it was a problem, right, when there wasn't somebody else around to get the spider for me. But this, I'm just kind of saying that there's sometimes when we start to act in these ways with wisdom and following the precepts, they can support our practice in unexpected ways that can help also alleviate fear. Caring for other beings, whether they're ants or our coworkers or our neighbors, makes it that we're less likely to be afraid of them. So wisdom, energy, blamelessness. And this last one was is something that I really appreciate. Having good relationships with others. Paying attention to our community, to our relationships, as a way to minimize fear. This makes sense, right? If you feel isolated or if you are fear by yourself, it's easier to become fearful, as opposed to if you feel that other people will help take care of you. Or one of my fears, right, is that I live alone, that something will happen to me, and there I'll be, you know, on the floor or something, and it won't be till the smell is so bad of my decomposing body that my neighbors will come. You know, I just get into these kind of crazy scenarios sometimes. But those type of fears, right, are less apt to happen if we have a community that we belong to or that we take care of. And now here's a list within a list. How do we take care of our community? How do we take care of our relationship with others? So in the Buddhist teachings, there are four things that we can do. One is practice generosity. This doesn't have to be explicitly about money or goods. It can be, you know, giving people the benefit of the doubt, giving people your time, giving people your good intentions, our skills, things that we know how to do. If we know how to work our smartphone or have the shortcut in the computer to help with somebody, to freely do that, willingly do that, to be generous. That really kind of helps knit together a community. Also helps people feel safe too, right? If you're generous to somebody, they feel safe. If they feel safe, you're more apt to feel safe. So that's the first thing we can do to support our relationships with others. The second is to use kind speech. I think this is obvious. That not to say mean things. Not to say untrue things. Not to gossip. Because then that kind of, you know, undermines your credibility, and then people start to feel uncomfortable around you. If you're gossiping about person X, who knows that you're not going to be gossiping about this person as soon as this person isn't in the room. Say kind things, recognize them, ask how they're doing, see people. It's not rocket science, we all know this. And then the fourth part about the Buddhist teachings about how to maintain good relationships is, I forgot how Bhikkhu Bodhi translated this. I love this word. I'll say it in Pali. But it has two parts, samana and atta. Samana means same. Atta is self. So treat others the same as you would treat yourself. That is, how you wish to be treated. And treat others, see others, interact with others without bias, without prejudice, but as you would wish to be treated, as you would wish to be seen. This makes sense, right? If we want to have good relationships with others. So this is a little bit confusing because I put a list inside of a list after another list, but so this is kind of the Buddhist way, right? There's four noble truths, but then the fourth truth has those eight things in there, and some of those eight things have other things in there. So some of the ways that we can decrease the amount of fear in our lives is cultivate wisdom, cultivate and take care of our energy, practice, create the conditions for blamelessness, practice ethics, morality, and have good relationships with others. These are all things that will decrease the amount of fear that we have in our lives. And to help us do that last one, create good relationships with others, we can be generous, use kind speech. I wonder if I think I forgot one of these. The third one was it's often translated as beneficial conduct. Help others, right? That's not surprising. And also to help others in a way that is in accordance with your beliefs, with your aspirations, that isn't, you know, different than that. And then the fourth one was this, treat others as you'd like to be treated. Treat them the same. And then in the case that this doesn't work, and fear does arise, you can recognize it, allow it, and apply whatever wisdom you have, whatever's available to you at that moment. So we have some time left. It's if somebody would like to ask some questions or comments or have something to say.
One of the things that I personally face in my life sometimes is fears that are based in past. So fears that are based in some things that you have seen in the past, and because of those negative experiences, you carry them in your future or your present behavior because they have hit your personality or your courage in a way that you avoid those situations again and again. And I'm pretty aware of the situation right now. I'm having a hard time not letting it affect me in the present moment. So I know to some extent that there's a futility in like leading with your past or with your past negative experiences, but I still sometimes stay with them. Do you have something about that you can tell us?
Yeah, first I want to say that all of us are affected by our past, right? I mean, that's part of being a human. So of course, right, if you had some experiences that affect you and influence how you behave now, we all do. We all have that. So it's perfectly normal that something is causing you to have fear. And so even maybe this idea of recognize, we could just recognize that, okay, I'm feeling fear here. And some of the wisdom is there's conditions for this. There's a reason why I have it. See if you can allow it. Can you allow the fear to be there? For me, something that's helpful is to feel my feet on the ground. That's something that's very tangible, and it's kind of like literally grounding. And it's less up to get carried away and spin out into stories if I'm feeling my feet on the ground. So in the moment when fear arises, maybe you could do something like this. That's, you know, in the moment, right there in the moment, intangible. And then, is there a way that we can, maybe there's, I don't know if I can explain this exactly right. Let's see how I can do this. It's almost like there are concentric circles of fear. We're afraid of I'm just going to make this up. Afraid of looking bad. So then we have this kind of letter, this fear of failure. So then we have a fear of starting new things. So then we have a fear of going to new places. I don't know, I'm just making them up. But they're kind of concentric circles. We don't always have to work with the most, with the scariest thing or the most core thing. We can practice, right? Our whole life is practice. Mindfulness is about practice. Let's work with those fears that are manageable. Maybe a little bit like how my working with the ants helped me with spiders. The ants, you know, I was a little bit creepy with them. But somehow working with small things and kind of gaining familiarity and this practice of feeling feet on the ground and what kind of wisdom is available right now. And then gaining some confidence and some experience in those ways. Then when real fear, I shouldn't say real because they're all real, when larger fears or bigger fears arise, you'll have a little bit of experience to draw from. Is that helpful?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so I wish you all a good evening with no scary dreams and may our practice together tonight be for the benefit of all beings everywhere. Thank you.